Marco, Sue, welcome.
Hiya.
How are you doing? Episode 64.
64. When I'm 64.
When I'm 64.
Not quite.
Not quite. Brilliant. So, Sue, welcome back. You've been on here before. I think we were on like episode 4 or 5 or something.
You took me for a ride in nice new flash car. I think you just got your nice new flash car.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's some years ago.
Yeah. And then I were right disappointed because she pulled it aside because we can't talk and drive. And we're like, oh man.
And we get told off though.
Yeah, I know. But nice flash posh car. And I got, well, to be fair, I got a bit of a ride.
You got a bit of a drive in it. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
I'm glad you said drive, not ride, because I said ride and that's got a different connotation on it, really. But anyway, moving swiftly along.
So, it's been 4 years ish or something along them kind of lines.
Yeah.
What's been happening in your world right now? In fact, actually, before we do that, so tell everybody what it is you do, just to give me a little bit of a heads up.
These days, how did I phrase myself the other day? I did some rebranding this last year. So these days, I class myself as a mental well-being mindset strategist.
Okay.
Which sort of. I'm all about reframing the way that people see themselves,
yes.
Situations, lives, and ultimately empowering them to better mental well-being.
Mm.
For a long time, I spoke about mental ill health. And that's the flip side of the same coin,
yes.
But it's got deep and dark in connotations to
sure.
it. So for me, it's all about the upside of everything now. So I'm a mental well-being mindset strategist.
Yeah.
I qualified last year as an NLP practitioner.
Brilliant.
And I'm a speaker. I'll speak to anybody, anywhere about the topic that's closest to my heart, which is basically the theme of which everything that I do these days, John, the theme of which is underpinned by the fact that it's the story we tell ourselves,
yes.
Not the actual root cause of whatever we think it is,
right.
That gets us into trouble. Certainly that was true in my own situation.
Sure. And what stories do people generally tell themselves?
Bullshit mainly. Yeah. Am I allowed to say that on camera?
So whatever you like.
We do. We tell ourselves a crock, but we convince ourselves that we can't do the things that we say we want to do.
Sure.
And we externalize it.
Mm.
We blame other people. So I can't do this because.
Yeah.
If I do this, then she might think that, oh my God, I might fail. I might this. If I could wave a magic wand, one of my grandkids said to me recently, what would you do if you waved a magic wand? One of the answers I gave her is not for camera. But the other was quite simply that I would, we don't use dictionaries these days as such.
No,
you know,
not
proper
at all.
Like we did when we were little. But I would go through the English language and erase all memory of words like should, would, if,
yep.
can't,
yep.
couldn't, etc., etc., etc. Because yep. all they imply is negativity.
Sure.
So for me, it's all about looking at life. Through the lens of positivity,
right.
which for far too many years, as you well know, I spent looking at it. You know, I mean, I never had a glass half full ever.
Right.
But by the same token, these days, yeah. I also know that glass was never empty.
Of course.
Because if there's nothing in it, actually there is, because it's full of oxygen.
It's full of oxygen. Yeah. So yeah. Just to add a bit of context to that, then. So you were saying about half full. I mean, just for people that may have not listened or
sure.
seen previously,
sure.
what are we talking about there?
In terms of my own journey, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I frankly almost drank myself to death, in the bluntest possible terms. The story I was telling myself, my story, everybody's got a story, we've all got an it. Mine was based in childhood, the memories, the perceptions I had of my childhood, more importantly. And I blame somebody else. I did have a lifelong battle, still do to a degree, journey along what I've come to term life's loneliest of roads, which is that of mental ill health.
Right.
Hence my need these days to reframe it to mental well-being.
Yes.
Over time and certainly during my adult life, that dissolved to such an effect that by the time I was admitted to hospital on 26th of September 2012, I'm nearly seven. And I said to people all the time, if I stuff up, you've got to forgive me because I'm not seven while September.
Yeah.
I'm still learning. But I was admitted to hospital with end-stage liver failure.
Mm.
Kidneys had gone. Blood pressure was through the floor, all that. It was very grim. I was 7.5 stone heavier than I am now.
Mm.
17 different prescriptions a day, 44 different pills and potions. It was a nightmare. I was a nightmare. I don't know if you can see these trousers, but I was actually the same colour as these trousers. It wasn't a pretty sight. You know, you'd have took a picture of me and put it in windows keep burglars away.
Yeah.
But clearly I declined the offer to drop off my mottle by my perch. Mm. And in the last 7 years, I've done a lot of reframing of my own.
Sure.
I was, if you like, my own first client.
Yeah.
Because what I now know for sure, mate, as you do too, everything starts here.
Of course.
Everything of course. Begins and ends with us.
Yeah.
Shameless plug for the Facebook group that I run.
Do
everything
it.
Begins and ends with you. Because it does.
Yes.
But I didn't know that. Mm. And I didn't. And I've read several books by the likes of Maya Angelou and Oprah Winfrey over the last few years. And one of Oprah's favourite sayings, which now everybody thinks she invented, but go figure, what I know for sure is that nothing ever happens to us for anything else other than a reason.
Right.
But when you're young and angry and so far up your own backside you can't see the sunshine, then it's everything gets clouded, doesn't it? Your judgment gets clouded,
your
everything, you know. And it's a waste of time. But by the same token, everything that's served to make me and you what we are today is a result of everything that's ever happened to us.
Yeah.
So how can we deny that as well?
Yeah, yeah.
It's been a hell of a curve in terms of learning, I have to say. Absolutely. And hopefully it'll carry on a while longer.
Oh, so I mean talking about like being an alcoholic effectively is
absolutely
term,
yeah. 5 bottles of wine by the day I was admitted to hospital, 5 bottles of wine per day, not even good quality wine, I have to admit, although it was a nice Chardonnay. Yeah. Oh, 5 bottles per day.
I love
day.
The humour side of it now. It's brilliant.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, the local coffee went bust when I went sober, they went bust.
So I mean what's the difference between like an alcoholic and someone that's considered as a functioning alcoholic? What'd you say?
Very little,
right.
Apart from I think the dependency aspect of it. I was a functioning alcoholic for a very long time.
Right.
I kept down a job and I had kids and everything, run a house, and I papered over the cracks.
Sure.
And that's pretty much.
Was you drinking during work though, or
no.
was it after?
Oh, No, never at work. I mean, I worked within education
sure,
and that.
Sure.
I wouldn't do that to kids.
Sure.
You know. But I became a bit like Sue Ellen, for those that remember Dallas. You know, I'd walk in through the back door of any given day, you know, and it'd be like, give me a drink.
Sure.
And it's a slippery slope.
Of course.
So, but, you know, sort of Friday night, Saturday night becomes Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, hangover Monday morning, you know. And it wasn't until, actually, my lad went to Afghanistan in the second Gulf War, and that tipped me over the edge mentally.
Sure.
Largely because of the fact that our son was literally in a war zone, and sadly 5 of his friends didn't come back.
Right,
you know, and what was left of my fragile mental health just completely imploded.
Yeah.
But I was very much, don't get me wrong, I was very much sure, why is this happening to me?
Okay.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, in terms, not I don't mean about his friends
but
it was situational.
Yeah.
Everything happened to me. I failed to understand that actually most of it was happening
for
because
you.
Of me
yeah.
or for me or
yeah.
both
yeah.
you know and but full blown true addiction, regardless of what that is, you get to a point where nobody sets out to become selfish, but addictions make you very, very selfish,
yeah.
and you don't understand that at the time, but nothing else, and I do mean nothing else matters more than your next fix, whatever your next fix happens
whatever
to be.
It, yeah.
Mine just happened to be
alcohol. Sure.
You know.
I think a lot of, because I mean, like, even myself up until like several years back, the kind of assumption of alcoholism is that you get up, you start drinking, and you drink all through the day, and it's just in a constant cycle. Not that you go to work sober, come home and never drink in the evening, because there's a lot of people that will do that, won't they? Do you know, several times?
Millions. And to be fair, in terms of World Health Organization statistics and all that business, 90% of the world have a drink problem, purely because of the levels, the minimum, maximum amounts are that we're supposed to drink.
Yes.
And in terms of health-wise, there probably are the safe limits to
be at.
Sure. But many people, especially in the Western world, would fall into the realms of being problem drinkers, I would think.
Of course.
Social becomes problem, becomes there's a difference, there's a fine line, there's a bit of a grey area between problem drinking becomes alcohol dependent, as in you can't get through your day unless you have a drink, but at that point it often is that's just to steady your nerves, or you know, take the edge off your anxiety.
Sure.
And again we frame it, we make the story fit, the story we're telling, that we need to get it in a little box, and when we apply that prospect that perception rather to anything that you're doing in your lives, we've all got an it.
Yes.
In a nice little box.
It fits in there perfectly.
Because
line.
We make sure it fits. Mm. That way we don't have to stick our head above the parapet.
Yeah.
and say, actually, I'm struggling.
Yeah.
You know, I'm vulnerable here. I need some help. I would rather have stuck pins in my eyes. In fact, oh no, I'll have another drink because then I won't have to tell anybody.
Of course.
The only person in Sheffield, which is where I lived at the time, the only person in Sheffield who was shocked by my diagnosis was me.
Right.
Seriously, everybody who was close to me, I was never ever a secret drinker.
Right.
People used to hide it from me. But we get bogged down. We get bogged down in the wax of life.
Mm.
You know, this is not my fault. Therefore, I can absolve myself of all the responsibility. And that was for me, again, Oprah. You know, she's a goddess in my book. But she talks about light bulb moments all the time.
Yeah.
Forget light bulb, but the minute I realised my part in the equation and what had been the story of my life up to that point, it was like July the 4th, November the 5th, New Year's Eve and Independence Day fireworks all going off at once, boom.
Yeah.
I would have had to have been unconscious not to take any notice of it.
Sure.
And it was just like, shit, I have a part to play in this. And that part was quite simply that every choice I'd ever made as an adult, every choice I'd ever made had been my choice. Mine.
Yes.
Every choice I'd ever made had a consequence. Good, bad or indifferent. Mm-hmm. Without exception. And every one of those consequences, good, bad or indifferent, was my responsibility.
Sure.
Go figure!
Yeah.
I was 52. Shit. 52 years it took me to wake up and smell the coffee, for sure.
Yeah.
But then, more importantly, get enough clarity and enough headspace to achieve that clarity,
sure,
to understand that actually, wow, yep, I have had, still officially have, a mental ill health journey.
Mm-hmm.
But along with being sober, I haven't had any prescription medications, apart from a brief spell last year when I was poorly, for different reasons. I haven't had any prescription meds at all in 7 years.
Really?
Because I refuse to. I now know that if we get this right, the mind-body connection is that bloody strong. You don't need it.
You don't need it.
You don't need it, and you can get your dopamine and your serotonin and all the other, what I call hacking your happy chemicals. You can get that just by engineering your mind. Reboot your mindset.
Sure.
You know, I'm about to launch a program called Reboot Your Mindset, and it's just like, forget Apple or Google. Stuff them.
Yeah.
You know, this 3-pound lump of tripe inside our brain, inside our head rather, the brain, it's the most powerful operating system there is.
And people just don't update it enough.
Absolutely. Yeah. We don't update the software.
But you do your phone every month.
It does it for you sometimes.
Every app, there's always a new update. Every time you go into the app store, there's an update for it, isn't there?
Do you know what? Absolutely. Part of one of the things I do is I go into schools and teach like growth mindset and self-belief and that type of stuff to kids. And the way I describe it to them, and we talk about synaptic nerve connections and neurons and all this business, and conscious and subconscious and unconscious. Do I bore them brainless? Some of them will probably say yeah, to be fair. But I don't talk about any language like that. We talk about light bulbs and spaghetti, Harry Potter and gaming levels, Fortnite and YouTube, because they understand it.
Of course.
Kids are like sponges. And if somebody had said to me when I was sort of 9, 10, 11, well, if you do this, this and this, and you can connect these dots, then that won't happen, that this might.
This could.
It's massive.
Sure.
It's massive. It ought to be compulsory in schools, I think.
I agree.
To be fair.
I agree.
But in terms of our head, our brain, the conscious, the operating system, we're both here, conscious, sober, and, you know, and we're fully aware of what's going off. For me, the subconscious is no more or less than the files that we have on our laptops and our devices.
Mm-hmm.
You store all the bits of information in it that you don't need until such a time as you do.
Yeah.
The unconscious, that reptilian little bugger that sits down. When I'm talking to the kids, I thought, oh, conscious, subconscious, unconscious. Clearly, it's not like that.
No.
But the unconscious brain, totally unresponsive, but totally driving everything.
Everything.
Every belief or behaviour pattern is in there, and everything that's ever happened to us, which scared me beyond belief when I realised it, everything that's ever happened to us that we've smelt, seen, touched, everything is
all there.
And I'm like, I know I've got a big head, but surely it's not that big.
It's not that big.
You know, but I certainly operated for far too long on automatic pilot. You know what I mean? You get in the car, you switch the engine on, that's your subconscious at work. I need to know how to remember to drive this car today.
Yeah.
And that's actually, then it goes, oh, actually, she knows what she's doing.
Yeah,
the times I've driven from here to Leeds and got out of the car and gone, I did that just out of that, and not kill myself or anybody else on motorway. Yeah.
And you trust it completely, though.
Absolutely.
You trust it to take you there and do things.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a mate. You've not moved into realms of Tesla yet.
No, I've not actually. No, I think they're intriguing.
Yeah, I've got a mate. He is now a mate. He's the guy that I did my NLP practitioner training with, who's got a picture, and it scared me brainless when I saw it. His girlfriend had taken him a picture of him driving his Tesla on a motorway. Steering wheel's there, his feet's up, and he's reading.
Yeah, drives itself.
And I'm like, Steve, what are you doing? He went, it's completely safe. And I'm like, nah, that's one step beyond for me. That's taking it, knowing everything I know now about operating on automatic pilot. Like, No.
They are incredible.
Absolutely. I did the South Yorkshire Business Show last year, and there was one at the side of me. Yeah. You know, they were exhibiting it, and I'm like, oh man, I can't. I'm going to see on the dashboard for a start. I'm massive, but it made me space. Yeah.
Space. What's it called? I can't think what's the word.
Me neither.
An aircraft. Spaceship. I couldn't say it then.
But it's just like science has evolved so much.
Of course.
The little bugger, the reptilian brain that's driving everything, is responsible for most of the stuff that happens to us. It's when we take charge of the subconscious that the battle starts, doesn't it? You know, the more I read about this stuff now, the more I think, oh gosh, truth. If I'd have known this when I was 11, you know, I mean, any of us had known this when we were 11. To be fair, angry teens wouldn't. You know, we'd be more. We'd be more able to adapt and respond.
Do you think that's been done purposely? Do you think that the government don't want us to have access to this information?
I don't know, to be perfectly honest. I know very little about politicians, but I actually don't think any of them are clever enough to have even thought about it that far, to be fair.
Yeah.
You know? But that's me being flippant. But I think there's a certain element of the wider population, they tend to dumb things down, for sure.
Right.
At what level? If you bought into conspiracy theories, you'd never do anything else but worry about them, would you? But yeah. I got on my soapbox a little while ago because they announced that in 2020, mental health was going to be on the curriculum in schools. Bullshit.
Mm.
What they failed to say was actually it should have been 2019 this year, which had actually originally been 2017, and in actual fact, Damien Hines the very following day said, and of course the good schools in this country, bearing in mind he's a Tory and I've got no political agenda, this is not a political statement, but he's a Tory and they often are public school educated.
Mm.
The good schools was how he phrased it. Yeah. The good schools in this country already have really good PSHE curriculum, and we'll just add it in there.
Right.
Really, you know, mental health, two words chucked into a curriculum that PSHE or PSHE, whichever way around it is, was an invented subject by the government, and in the school I worked in at the time that it was invented, at the time that it was brought in. They said to a really good PE teacher, right, there you go. You're really good at fitness. You designed that curriculum. And she was like, what?
Yeah.
And actually, because of the type of person she is, it ended up being really good. But you can't stick two words on a curriculum, pad it out with a bit of blurb and a bit of fluff, and make people's mental health issues go away.
Yeah.
You know, 0 to 16 in this country, John. 0 to 16.
0 to 16.
0 to 16. Governmental classified. Yeah. Basically, you live in, so therefore you have to be included.
Mm.
0 to 16, mental health issues in this country have now reached critical level.
Yeah.
0 to 14. By the time you've got girls, if your girls lived in this country, by the time they were 14. 50% of our children have seen their doctor for an identifiable mental health issue.
Right.
Now, that could be something like anxiety or bedwetting or whatever, but nevertheless, that's why they can't have it in the curriculum for two words. It's too wide.
Right. Yeah.
By the time our young people are 24, i.e. just finishing uni or college or whatever, 75% have been affected by mental ill health.
Why though?
Because they're not getting the support in the wider infrastructure.
But we never had support though, either, did we?
No, we didn't. But these days, it's all peer pressure. We had peer pressure. Sure. I mean, I remember being traumatized as a child by having to wear brown plastic sandals
from whatever
supermarket my parents could afford to shop at. You know, my friend next door still had plastic shoes, but they were shoes, they weren't sandals.
I remember education, the place I used to go to.
Yeah.
The jeans and the jackets.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it was a different time, and you know what? The situations are similar now. Peer pressure still exists,
sure.
But now we've got a zillion channels on the TV. We've got lots to aspire to, which, as we both know, is a good thing, except when it's not.
Well, they compare themselves.
Zero brushed air models, comparison factors, imposter. Well, you know, we could go on forever, but it's. And I think also parenting today is a lot more.
It's really laser.
It's quite lazy, you know. Oh, just watch that.
Is
your tablet or your phone, watch that. But also, for many people, it's also that they're coddling their kids. You know, we were born, or certainly I was born, in a time where parents would open the back door, you'd go out to play, and you'd come home when you were hungry. You could climb and fall out of as many trees as you liked.
Sure.
You could walk down the side of the canal or the number of times that we once, where I live, we once set a rope swing up across a railway line. You know,
as you do.
Because there weren't many trains and they weren't high speed, but if one of it hit us, we'd have been dead.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure if my parents had known that that's what we were getting up to, me and my brother, when we were out and about,
we'd have been in big
trouble. But I see a lot these days with the families that I work with, is that she can't do that because she might hurt herself. Mm. Let them fall down.
Yeah.
Let them scrape the knee.
Sure.
Let them be disappointed. Mm. So what? They don't get a £300 Xbox new all singing, all dancing for Christmas.
Sure.
They will learn. Will they learn a negative money mindset? Well, they will if you tell them money don't grow on trees, but that's a whole different story. You know, but we need to learn the value of things. I think that's where we've lost the sense of values.
Mm.
And for lots of our young children, they don't understand things about core beliefs and values.
Yeah.
Everything's instant gratification, and if we can't have it and have it now, then we're a failure.
Sure.
Of all the yardsticks that you could use as a societal norm, things like failure and imperfection, again, pardon my French, are bullshit. Because normal by whose standards?
Of course.
You know,
of course.
It's not normal for a child in downtown Delhi who can't afford to eat to have a £300 Xbox for Christmas.
Sure.
And yet, you will not meet a more mindful set of people ever.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, I've not been to places like Bali yet, but you know what?
It's a different mindset.
It's a different mindset. But do you know what struck me most? The first time I went to India, the second one, I went last year with Paul and I did a bit of a tour in the Northern Triangle. And even the roundabout adverts are geared towards growth mindset.
Right.
I took a picture, there's a picture, it was towards the end of the school year there, when we were there last year, and there were posters all over the place of kids in school uniform, and the growth mindset element of the posters were, so which college will you go to?
Right. Right.
What degree will you take? Mm. You know, and it wasn't elitist. The Indian society's educational system, as I understand it, people can either afford to go or they can't.
Right.
But there was no, like, look at us, we're better than you. There
sure.
was none of that.
Sure.
And it was all like, it's all about positive expectation.
Of course.
You are fortunate enough to have this education, therefore what are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
If we could just take that and apply it here, where our children get educated largely for free...
Yeah.
And instill that same process.
5 years' time.
5 years' time.
There'd be no mental health issues.
No.
There
would be significantly reduced.
Yeah.
The school I worked in for the last 2 years, one of the members of staff said before I left in May this year, she said in all her years of being in that school, she had never had two sets of SATs lessons in the time they'd been in practice. She'd never had two years where the SATs exam week had gone off without a hitch.
Right.
Not one nervous breakdown from a child.
Right.
I mean, I use that term generally.
Of course.
But what did happen were, as part of the program that I taught them, they were learning how to breathe mindfully.
Mm.
They were meditating. The very first time I did it, I got at least three clowns. These kids were 10 and 11. And I got at least three clowns, God bless them. What naughty little boys. That were instantly sat there going, crossing the legs and taking the mic.
I'm like,
wow. You were a Zen master. What? Do you know what? By the time that 6 months program were up, the kids were going, miss, are we breathing today?
Yes.
And in SATS week, it was like, Sue, can we do this? Yeah. Sue, don't forget we need
to
breathe. 6 months and nothing's changed except 2 hours a week on a Monday.
Yeah.
You know, and that's for a very limited, and that's not counting bank holidays and stuff like that. Less than 30 hours for each class, so two classes. If you could wave a magic wand, going back to what Meg said to me, wave a magic wand and teach that in every educational establishment in the world, you know, forget mental health, that would be a thing of the past in one generation. Yeah. Wars, conflict, because there'd be no ego.
Yeah.
Yeah, there would be no ego. If we got rid of ego, you know, no such thing as competition, only collaboration.
Yeah.
Oh God, I could talk about it. Somebody said to me recently, everything. Get off your soapbox. And I, there's not a soapbox big enough. I'm only 5 foot one.
But it is really interesting, isn't it? I mean, like, I worry that over the next 3 to 10 years, that the mental health issue is going to get increasingly worse because we're all talking about it more. And I think it's good to talk about it, but I think when you start to focus on anything,
We focus on expands.
It expands, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So all of a sudden, there's going to be a lot of cases coming out. And I think that people just don't understand there's a huge difference between mental health and mental illness.
Yes.
And I think there's a lot of people that's just jumping into this space. Yeah. I don't mean like in terms of, well, I don't mean in terms of trainers or leadership. I just mean people as a whole that's jumping in and like diagnosing themselves. I mean, the amount of youngsters that you see now.
Go on Google. I've got this.
Yeah. I'm socially awkward. That's not a term. Where's that come from? That's been made up.
Some well-meaning psychologist, I would suspect. No disrespect to my psychologist friends.
Yes. I'm socially awkward, may not.
Most kids are socially awkward at some point. Yeah, they don't want to have to go and kiss Auntie Frida because they've never met her before. Yeah, just go and kiss her.
And she's got a moustache.
Yeah, she's got a moustache. She's got back. I don't want to kiss her. I don't know. Yeah, that's
totally.
Social awkwardness.
Yeah,
you know. But you know what? Mirror your beliefs. Mirror the kids' beliefs back to them. And they'll thrive and they'll grow.
Of course.
One of the things that I did in school last year, the year before now, this particular lad, Jake, they called him. And they had a task. We talked about mountaineering in that particular lesson, and the task was they had to go away knowing that the bottom of the mountain is called base camp,
right,
and the peak is the summit. Mm-hmm. What do you need to get from the base to the summit? Mm-hmm. The answer was knowledge. Didn't matter how you got there, you just needed the knowledge, and we'd all have different paths and all that business. Come back next time, tell me where you want to be. If that summit's when you're 16, you come back next week and tell me where you want to be, all of you. We got the prerequisite amount of, I want to go on Britain's Got Talent. You know, I want to sing and this, that and the other. And they were allowed to show us why, because it's important. And this kid stood up and he said, me, miss, I'm going to be a Jedi warrior. And I'm like, oh, okay. Because I told them I would prove to them how they could do it.
Yep.
And I'm like,
interesting.
Yeah. So I've got 3 kids, 5 grandkids and a number of years in education. And without even thinking about it, I went, right, okay, Jay, this is what we'll do. We'll get you through school. You'll learn. He was a bright lad, so he wasn't particularly challenged educationally. I said, get good grades.
Yep.
You can do one of two things here. And I'm thinking on my feet and I'm pausing a lot to give myself brain space. And I said, the first thing you could do is you could actually join a space program. Uh-huh. And his little eyes lit up. He's 10 at this point. And I said, Britain's got a space program now. I said, first woman in space, lived in Sheffield. Actually, I think she lives about 10 miles from here.
Right.
His little eyes went a bit lighter. I said, you could go to the America, join NASA. I said, you could actually go into space. It might be, who knows what they'll call it by the time you've qualified to be an astronaut. Mm. Jedi warrior?
Yeah.
We both know that's on a film, but you could be the real equivalent.
Sure.
Or you could learn to act. Get yourself off to RADA. Again, pass out with a really good degree in acting. Mm-hmm. Catch a flight to California. Knock on George Lucas's door and say, here I am.
Yeah.
What? You've not got another script? I'll write you a script and I can star in it.
And I'm going to be the star. It's the whole Rocky story.
Absolutely. And do you know what? That kid, literally, I swear to God, he floated out of that classroom. His mates that were laughing 5 minutes earlier were going,
what?
Oh, I'll tell you what, my street cred went up immensely in this class of boys. 3 months later, that was sort of September, he came back after Christmas, so January term, and he walked in through the classroom door and he went, miss, I said, yeah, what's up, Jake? And he went, can the Jedi warrior, I want to be a vet. And he went and sat down, and that was his, he'd done 3 months, he'd had his little fantasy. I've now got a keynote which is I credit him every time. Amazing. You know, the next time your child wants to be a Jedi warrior, go out and buy him a lightsaber, because next week he's going to want to be a vet.
Yeah,
it's true. Simple. It's true. Mirror their beliefs. If we mirror the beliefs of our kids, does it matter that they want to be Jamie Oliver or go on Britain's Got Talent?
But why not? I mean, do you know the thing that's really I find fascinating about this is that as children we support them to do things like that.
Yeah.
Whereas if that was a 30-year-old person, man or female, saying, I want to be a Jedi warrior, they'd get laughed at.
Absolutely.
And
it doesn't
think
matter.
That it's incredible, isn't it?
It is.
Like how we change.
Do you know what? I have to say that I used to be the sort of person that when I've not watched TV now, as you well know. I've not watched it for at least 3-4 years, at least, because I just realised that when I realised how finite my time was on this planet, I got too much time to do to watch TV. And that's not me being elitist. I just don't have time to watch it.
Of course.
But at the time that Britain's Got Talent was rife, you know, I remember being one of those people on a Saturday night, sat on the couch with my takeaway my treat of a Saturday of a takeaway, and watching Britain's Got Talent, programmes like that, and laughing, going, oh my goodness, what are these people doing? But who got it wrong, John?
Yeah.
They've got enough confidence
to go and do this,
to stand up there, and they don't care a monkey's ass if they get ridiculed, because they know they're good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who are you and I to tell them they're rubbish?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like art. It's subjective, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, you look at Picasso and you think, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't see what you can see, but that doesn't mean it's not right.
Sure, sure.
You know, I put a post up on social media the day about perception, and I'd taken George, our youngest, or one of our youngest grandkids, out, and we'd gone up to the local country park, and they've got a big, like, a great big concrete tunnel that's like a drainage tunnel. And it suddenly struck me that the way the conversation unfolded between me and him, I'm thinking, I want to go and sit in that sunny spot by that tree and read a book. Because I was looking that way towards where he was standing. His perception was he could see the adventure playground behind me, and he didn't want to go. He's not going to watch me read a book. He wants to be in that playground, up that tree. And so I took two pictures, what he could see, what I could see.
Yeah.
And then it was all the whole thing unfolded about compromise and choice and stuff like that. And if we can apply those types of principles
to everything else that
we're not doing, just to our kids, but to the conversations we're having
as
adults with our better halves, our spouses, our grown-up kids, neighbours, bosses.
Everybody,
doesn't matter. The world would be a much, much, much more peaceful place.
Yeah, totally. Reminds me of one of the sketches that I saw on Facebook. It was an animated sketch, and it were two people at the opposite ends pointing at some, like, logs. And they were connected and drawn, and one side they got 4, and the other side it got 3.
Yes.
And so they're both arguing about who's right, because he can see 3, he can see 4.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, there's 4, no, there's 3, no, there's definitely 4, no, there's definitely 3.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're seeing.
But we both know, don't we? This is a shared reality.
Yeah.
You can see what's going off through the camera. I can just see your sparkly little eyes and the bookcase behind you. You can see outside the window.
Of course.
We will have different recollections of this until we see it back.
Mm.
You know. Life's like that.
Of course it is.
My truth is not your truth.
Yes.
We can be talking the same language in the same country at the same time, having a conversation, and the truth of the matter is we'll both remember different things.
Well, what's real to you is real to you, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Talk to me about growth mindset. What's growth mindset?
Oh, man.
How do you summarise that?
For me, quite simply, anybody can be taught to think bigger than their whatever their current worldview is. And in the most simplistic of terms, and certainly I would describe it when I'm talking to young people, is kids, regardless actually of their background, are renowned for saying, I can't do that, miss. Can't do it. It's just not happening. I can't get it. Add one word. Add just one word into the middle of that sentence, which is yet.
Yes.
Can't do it yet.
Yeah.
Because that implies to your brain that actually there's a possibility of a solution.
Sure.
For me, a growth mindset is no more or less than looking at the bigger picture. Yeah, I can't do this. That's a fact. I cannot ride a unicycle. Mm. I can't. But I could if I wanted.
Yeah.
So I can't do it yet.
Yeah.
The way I couch it is, there's a massive difference between being able to do something and not wanting to, and wanting to do something but not being able.
Yeah.
And yet what I know for sure these days is, there's no such thing as can't. It's just can't yet.
Yeah.
In a brief sort of synopsis, that would be the way I couched it. But Walt Disney, we all know Walt Disney. There isn't a child, I don't think, in the entire world who doesn't know who Walt Disney is. But what many people don't understand about Walt Disney is his first film studio, Laugh-O-Gram, went bust.
Yeah.
He was bankrupt.
7 times, I think it was.
Yeah, it's just, it just boom, 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 boom. But he had enough self-belief to underpin his dream.
Sure.
Dream it, you can do it.
Yep.
He's famous for that.
Yep.
He is, for me, he's the epitome of a growth mindset. It doesn't work. Refocus, realign, regroup. Let's try that. No, it don't work.
Yeah.
Right, so I now know what doesn't work. So that means I don't have to waste my time on that. Yeah. I can try this instead.
Sure.
It's all about possibility.
Sure.
If there's a possibility, by definition, it means it's not impossible.
Mm. Do you think that this is a UK thing or is it a worldwide thing? Because we are a lot more reserved here in the UK than like in America. I mean, America's very open to failure, whereas we see it as fatal.
Yeah. People like me, people like you to a lesser extent, depending, I don't mean that in a rude way, but in terms of what our stories are, in this country, we very definitely still fall into the camp of, who does she think she is sharing this story?
Mm.
Or, and why don't she shut the up? Well done for sharing, that's helped me a lot. In America, I think they've gone to the other end. I've never been to America, so I may be talking out of turn here, but I've got lots of friends over there. And in America, this is my story, yes, I'm sorry, I apologise, I'm wrong, and all that, all those sort of pretentious politicians, again, the world over, don't start me. But as a race, they understand the value of, number one, being seen to be vulnerable, number two, apologising for their part in it, and starting over again.
Mm.
And there isn't anything wrong with that.
Mm.
There isn't. Just in this country, it's like, my dad used to say, you know, we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
If outside these four walls, it's not happening.
Yeah.
Really, Dad? These walls are very thin.
Of course.
You know.
It'd be interesting to look at some statistics, actually, like coming back onto the mental health side, like what countries affected the most?
I don't know what current ones are. When we very first met, I would have been able to tell you what they were at that side. But in terms of,
I reckon UK is really, really high.
It is. It absolutely is. And I think in part that's because of all the reasons we've discussed, but also because there's a massive, and I mean massive, waiting list to get an appointment to see a professional, especially if it's a particular field, sort of, you know. And these days, if you go to your GP in this country, and you just want to talk to a counsellor, or you just want to offload, and you know your GP doesn't have time, the stock response for, and I'm generalising here, so I apologise for any GP that's going to say, I don't do that. But the stock answer is, ring this number.
Right.
And you self-refer to IAPT, which is talking therapies.
Right.
And many people do.
Right.
And many people, you see them as they come out, they're just going, he didn't listen to me.
Yeah.
He doesn't have time.
Yeah.
That's not his fault. Mm. It's all about perception. So yeah, I think in this country, if we don't do something and fast, we'll be top of the league table.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it is. I mean, like talking about like America again. This is purely from connections and friends. But like you'll often see them saying, "Oh yeah, I'm just going to see my therapist today." It's like it's like the monthly visit.
Yeah.
And it's like
it's tax deductible.
But the people's like, "Well, what's wrong with you?" Well, nothing. Mm. I just go to them because it's a good sounding board.
Yeah.
It's just normal for them. For us, it's like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's somebody, I did a radio interview beginning of this year, and the guy that was interviewing me said, so if I came to you as a client, would you be seeing me in 12 months' time? And I went, no disrespect, but I hope not.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually said that. I said, no disrespect, I hope not, because I'm not American. And although your visits to me would, if they're business related, would be tax deductible, I personally would think, either you're not listening to a word I'm saying, or I'm barking up the wrong tree.
Of course.
And my deal, if you like, with people that come to work with me is like, let's get you in here and let's get you to where you want to be, not where I want you to be.
Yeah.
I don't want you throwing thousands of, please throw thousands of pounds at me. Please do.
Please do, yes.
But
I'll happily accept
but,
that.
But let's do it on a basis where we're both going to benefit. And for me, with the American system, if the client is genuinely getting something out of it, and it may well be that they just don't have anybody else to talk to, and they literally pay. I have a bit of an issue with it. It depends what the psychiatrist angle is. They're just creaming it off and taking it in. Because personally, for me, I spent far too many years in therapist's office where I knew they weren't taking a blind bit of notice.
Right.
So you know, they got one eye on me, and they always put the clock above the client's head.
Yeah.
Say one eye on me, the other eye on the clock, and they'll say, all right, okay, so 59 minutes. Well, we'll talk about this next time.
Yeah.
And by the time I got to the end of my career in terms of both drinking and going to therapist, it was like, so what are we going to talk about next time then? What do you mean? Well, you've clearly not been listening to me for an hour. The very last therapist I had, I was his last appointment on a Friday. Go figure. Was he listening to me? No. Was he any good? No, but he got me an hour off work, so I was happy.
Of course. So like, someone comes to you, they've got some kind of mental health issue.
They don't actually. I don't. Yeah, they come to me with. How am I going to couch this? I recently, as part of the rebranding that I did, the way I describe myself is that I work with professional swans.
Professional swans, yeah.
And everybody goes. Initially, vets? No, I'm not a vet. Somebody actually said that to me. No, I'm not a vet. Yeah. But yeah, it's that. Yeah. I work with professional swans, and actually that's got nothing to do with your business, your career, your employment, how much money you earn. You professionally present the illusion that you're sliding through life serenely.
Sure.
Not a care in the world. Underneath you're paddling like crazy just to keep afloat.
Just afloat.
And it's so people, going back to what I said a little bit earlier, it for me, a professional swan is somebody who's the epitome of somebody who is living a fear-based life.
What does that mean? What's a
fear-based living for me is anybody that is going back to what I said earlier, can't do that because then she'll think this about me. What will they say? For me, the five main fears with most people that I work with are failure and mistakes, because mistakes are lots of little repetitive bits. What I now know for sure is you're not scared of making mistakes. You're sick to death of having to explain yourself along the way and you don't want to do it. So if I don't make a mistake, failure is a bit more catastrophic. Change, you know, change is inevitable in life. Personal growth is a choice. The fear of failure, mistakes, change, the opinions of other people. And I did some research online about a month ago, John, and I was staggered. One thread alone in a group that has absolutely nothing to do with anything. It's just a sort of a global group. 300 comments, which saw me spending 5 days. So I'm very polite. My dad always said, if you ask a question, be prepared to answer.
Yeah.
You know, people respond. Uh-huh. So I spent 5 days going, oh gosh, you know. 75% across Twitter, Instagram, Facebook particularly, 75%, the question was, what is your number one self-limiting belief or behaviour? 75% of people said, I am not enough.
I'm not enough, right.
Those exact words. Right. And I just sat back and I was like, wow. Because under that umbrella comes, I'm not good enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not clever enough. I'm not rich enough. I'm not enough. Enough already. Enough. You are enough is basically my answer.
Sure.
So I think fear-based living, what most people don't understand is things like anxiety are driven by fear. And therefore, they don't necessarily come to me with a mental health issue because it's not even on their radar.
Of course.
I'm just scared of this, or I'm fed up of that, or I don't... Oh, wow. They don't realise that the anxiety is actually possibly part of a bigger... sort of slide.
Sure.
You know, so fear-based living for me would be a better descriptor, because if anybody, you or me, anybody that we both know, if anybody's starting sentences with, yeah, but if, and I haven't got, and yeah, lots of that will be based in that fact, but if it's repetitive and it's the same excuse, in inverted commas, there's something going on.
Of course.
I have worked with too many people this last 2 years to know one thing for sure. What they come to me with as an initial, if this doesn't stop happening, then they go out going, really? And I thought it was that.
Yeah, it's linked to something else.
But it's this, and it's usually something that's anchored in an emotional pain point. The people on BGT, Britain's Got Talent, they don't have emotional pain points, or if they do, they don't care about them.
Sure.
They don't care who laughs at them. They're running towards Simon Cowell going, pick me, you know. They've once probably been on a karaoke somewhere in a pub when them and all the mates were stoned and somebody said, you're an amazing singer, you're going to be the next Beyonce or whatever, Gum. And they do it.
Internalised it.
Absolutely. Yeah. In reverse, if it's anchored in an emotional pain point, oftentimes we don't even remember what that is.
Mm.
We just know we don't like it.
Yeah. And therefore, we don't know why.
We're not going to do it. We're not going to go there again. You know?
Just going back to what you said, so there were five things that you said. So the first one was...
Failure, mistakes, Change.
Yeah. People's opinions,
and lack.
Right.
Which comes down to not being enough. Okay. I'm lacking in some way.
Right.
And that falls into that opens up. If one of these are in play in anybody's life, your life or mine, it's highly unlikely, from my own research, that they will be alone. Yeah. They've got a mate.
Yeah.
The flip side of that coin for me, in terms of how I work with people, is we've all got bank accounts. We've all got fiscal bank accounts. The number of noughts in our bank account is a benchmark for how successful we are. Noughts can be in black or red. You know, our five personal bank accounts, which for me are the most important, are physical, spiritual, emotional, mental, and social.
Right.
The professional swans of this life, when they start to dip into the red because they're not looking after themselves, they, like the others, they're not on their own. If you are not looking after yourself on a physical level, your mentality will start to dip.
Sure.
If your mental health declines in some way, your emotional health will follow suit. Mm. It becomes a self-perpetuating wheel of decline.
Of course, yes.
And what I now know is that if these go into the red, you are falling into the realms of overwhelm, stress, anxiety, depression, and all that sort of stuff, and your life starts to unravel. We become a bit like a man spinning the plates in the circus. Because, you know, we're gliding, but we're paddling or spinning like crazy. We don't want to be seen to be vulnerable, imperfect, lacking, failure, all that business. And seriously, all I can say to anybody, if that describes you, it's not worth it. Because you start to self-medicate. You might go to your doctor and get medication. You might not even finish the course, or you might become addicted to prescription drugs. You might think, screw that, they don't work, which is what I did, and start to drink.
Yeah.
And it unravels. But when we're living automatically, then we do as we're told.
Yes.
But Seth Godin got it right. We get what we settle for, mate. We don't have to settle for what we get.
Of course.
Except he didn't say mate, obviously. but we do, and that's true. We think because this is it, this is what my life is, we think that's it.
Mm.
No.
It's just reminding me of, I think it was Jim Rowan who said it actually, who says that most people, they think they want more than they need, but settle for less than what they can have.
Absolutely.
And I think it's so true, isn't it?
It absolutely is.
So all these different situations that people find themselves in, these issues, these anxiety problems, the beliefs, the stories, how do you fix them? Is there a framework that you use?
I forget why you said it a little while ago, but fearless living. Somebody said to me the other day, it's all right for you, you're fearless. Because my signature program, if you like, is called Fearless.
Yeah.
Like F.E.A.
Yeah.
But for me, and I was like, hang on a minute, if a tarantula stomps across that floor now, I'm off. I'm not fearless in that respect, but for me, and in terms of how I work with other people, fearless simply means, John, being able to live my life in my way, on my terms, without ever needing to apologise, justify, excuse or explain myself.
So you're not talking really about being fearless, you're about fearing less.
Fearing less.
Yeah.
Fear less, live more. Yeah. That's the business name. Fear less, live more. But, you know, and I lead people, ultimately, swans of this world particularly, to live happier, more meaningful lives in a way that serves them, not me, to be happy, healthy and whole.
Good.
Physically and mentally.
And how do you do that? Is there a particular
framework? Fearless as a framework
stands
for forgiveness.
Right.
That can be of ourselves.
Yep.
It usually is. Yep. And we don't think it is. We think it's our fault. Yeah, it's not. It's normal. But forgiveness in some respect is always there. Embrace ourselves for who and what we are.
Yep.
Accept that.
Yep.
Build the resilience that we need then to let everything go
without
any fears attached to them, so we can empower ourselves to step up to success.
That's incredible.
And if you like, and I said it before, I was my own first client. The program's evolved significantly since then, I have to say, but it's essential. And not everybody that comes to me will need to address all of those bits. But I promise you, because of the way our five senses of cells work, somewhere there's a little T that's not been crossed, or an I that's not been dotted, or maybe you've forgot to put a pause in somewhere. There are some little loose ends that need tying up.
Sure.
You know, and it's working, and you know, it's people are starting to provide feedback, which is good for me, but it actually helps to evidence it to others. which is very gratifying.
Yeah, totally. So the five again, what were them five? So
the
cells.
Personal bank accounts.
Yes.
Mental, physical, emotional, social, spiritual.
Right, yeah.
And somebody said, well, I'm not religious. Yeah. No,
it's
neither
not,
am
it's
I.
Not about that. Yeah.
But, you know, Deepak Chopra.
Indeed.
Deepak Chopra, for me, got it spot on. One of my, just digressing here, Liv, our eldest granddaughter who's nearly 18, calls me the queen of quotes. And I'm like, no, Oprah's got that. But I get, but thank you. But these people know what they're talking about. Deepak Chopra, when he was describing what spirituality meant to him, said that in his book, he feels that it's the stillness between our thoughts. In the Western world, in this world, when was the last time you or I even paused between thoughts? They race through our brains, and there's no like, oh, I've got to get dinner, I've got to get the cat, I've got to... There's no stillness, full stop.
No.
Let alone sitting there and just batting the thoughts away. You know, I mean, do you still meditate?
Yeah,
I meditate
every
single day now. If I can meditate by water, the locals up at Thrive, I think I'm crackers. Because you'll find me on a little... I don't sit there going, oh.
No, I know.
Yeah, but it's not, you know, it's not like sitting cross-legged on top of a mountain
it's
in Tibet,
that,
is it?
No,
it's just being.
It's being still.
It's being still. Yeah. And same with being mindful. You know, who'd have known? Mindfulness.
Sure.
Mindfulness. There was somebody said to me, I haven't got any time for this mindfulness shit. And I'm like,
what?
Do you have a shower?
Yeah.
He was like, what? Of course I have a shower or a bath every day. I went,
set
the stall out the night before, get showered.
Sure.
From the minute you open your bathroom door to the minute you come out, close your eyes and have a shower.
Yeah.
Do everything you need to do without seeing anything. And I promise you, you will live fully in that moment because you'll be scared to death of slipping on the soap and braining yourself.
Yeah, true.
It
true.
Works.
True. So just finally then, NLP. NLP has been around for a number of years now.
Yes, Richard Bandler and his sidekick, I forget whose name escapes me at the minute.
Sure. Like, tell me about NLP. I mean, I know it.
Neuro-linguistic programming. Do you know what, John? I'd run a series of workshops. I'd done 18 months. I'd built this workshop, and I thought, this is what I need to do because I'd sort of assimilated everything to my own life, and I had no clue that everything I was teaching. As in reframes and flips and all that. Just reframe. And I started off by saying to people, when we change out the story we tell ourselves, we change our mindset, it can change our lives. That was the very first peanut that I started with. And before I knew where I was talking about all this stuff. And then somebody said to me, you need to do NLP. And I looked into it and I thought,
I'm already doing it.
That's what I've been doing for 18 months.
Yeah.
I may as well get qualified in it.
Sure.
And it's fascinating.
This isn't
you know, and we're both mirroring the way that we're sitting and we're you know, and it's very powerful and it's not about brainwashing, but it is all about helping people to understand the connection between their thoughts and the feelings that they attach to them.
Of course.
If you are rooted in pain, you will do anything not to repeat it.
Of course.
It might be having a conversation with somebody.
Sure.
It might be not crossing that train track. It doesn't matter what
whatever
it is.
Totally.
And it's helping you to understand, and again, that mind-body connection, because emotion, energy in motion, we evidence it here, you know, and God, you could talk forever, couldn't you?
Of course.
Perception and all that business.
What do you think is the most powerful part of NLP
for
you? For
me personally, it's given me personally the skills to understand the other side of any given conversation with anybody that I'm having. Because, you know, you can see it in their eyes, you can see it in the body language. And for anybody that's ever going to have a conversation with me, either for the rest of the day or the whenever we meet, I'm not assessing anybody when I'm talking to them these days because it just is.
Yes,
it's knowing that what comes out of here is often belied by the way they look, by the way they sit, and all that business, and knowing there's something more going on that perhaps they're willing to share at that time.
Okay.
But it's, in terms of benefits for other people, when we, the three-person analogy, but when we're the only one, if you, the name escapes me what the exercise is now, but you describe a situation as yourself out loud to yourself, or maybe you write it down, and then you take yourself out of yourself and you literally physically move yourself
to the next person
and become, I don't know, the husband or the boss or whoever, ask the exact same question and answer as them, and then do it again as a complete bystander, and it's quite it's a bit of a trick to get into it, but when people can do that for themselves, you know,
self-coaching
yeah. and yeah, they might need a little bit more help and all that sort of stuff, but there's powerful stuff. The way I described to somebody the other day, it's taken you 47 years to believe the bullshit you're telling yourself. It's going to take a lot less than 47 years to unpick that.
But we're not going
to
do it in a day.
You have to do the work, and you have to take responsibility. And it starts, everything begins and ends with you, by catching yourself in the act of speaking in the way that you've been speaking to yourself.
Yeah.
And reframe it.
Sure.
Affirmations. We both know the power of affirmations. Totally. Affirmations got me to India and made me a profit in 2017.
It is, I mean, what you just said there, the language that we use to communicate with ourselves.
Be careful, you're listening.
Incredible. I mean, like, if that was a person speaking to you the way that you speak to yourself, you'd punch him in the face.
Yeah, well, maybe not, but I'm a pacifist, mate. But yes, but you're right.
Yeah,
well, you wouldn't. And for me, that actually was a large part of my old self. Mm. I allowed people to do and say things to me and put me down, and I bought it and I owned it and I validated it. And it just added another layer to my onion because I believed they were telling it me, so therefore I was telling myself the truth.
Yeah.
It's a crock.
Definitely so.
And there's much we can do to to do that. You know what? The power of the mind is amazing.
Yeah.
Going back to Apple and Google, but we're in control.
Yes.
It's not. And when we can help ourselves by just all you might some. The easiest way for anybody to start is just to catch themselves in the
moment,
act of saying, how many times do we all say to us, oh, you idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah. What an idiot.
I know.
I am stupid. I know. No. And then reframe it. Exactly. No, I'm not.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
You're very clever. So I have these conversations all my time. All the
and
time.
And you just start to believe it.
Absolutely. The thought cycle, isn't it? You know,
it is.
What we think, we start to speak like. When we speak like it, we act it. When we act it, before we know where we are, we believe it.
Yeah.
0 to 7, going back to kids and their mental health.
Shaping everything.
0 to 7, imprinting years. We believe what we've been told.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we?
Of course.
These people are feeding us
of
and
course.
Clothing us,
yeah,
you know, or teachers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, my nan once said to me, you don't ever question a policeman, a solicitor, or a teacher, because they've all been to university, and people like us don't go.
Right.
Whoa.
Really? Wow.
Guess what? I never went to university.
Yeah. Yeah.
But these days, I tell anybody that'll listen, I graduated from the University of Life. So therefore,
exactly. Yeah.
I got
a
first-class honours degree.
And it is. I mean, like, so true. Just coming back, what we were saying there is like, I often say to people, if you tell yourself a lie enough times, you believe it.
Absolutely.
And it's,
it becomes
it's,
the truth. Just look at Donald Trump. Oh, did I say that?
Well, there's a good story that we can all learn from Donald Trump, that you don't have to be skilled and highly intelligent to get the job of the dreams.
No.
So,
no.
You know.
Or this probably won't go live, but I'll clearly have mirrors in your house. So. Sorry, Mr.
Brilliant.
Trump.
Brilliant. Sue, it's been incredible. That's been amazing. Sue, where can people find out more about yourself?
You can find me on Google, Fear Less Live More, Sue Kerr, Fear Less Live More. My website's suker.com.
Yeah.
I'm all over social media like a rash, as you all know, in various forms. Suker. Fear Less Live More is my business page. Everything begins and ends with you. And on Instagram,
sure.
I couldn't have Fear Less Live More because somebody else had got it. How
God
rude.
Damn it, how rude.
So Fear Less Live More Now on Insta.
Brilliant, fantastic. Well, we'll put a link on in the description somewhere for people listening or watching.
About that long.
There'll be loads, yes. This Sue. Once again, thank you so much. It's
my
been
pleasure.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Cheers.